So, good afternoon for everyone. Let's start our afternoon session, which is titled Approaches of Multisource Statistics. First of all, some organizational request. I would like to ask you if you can turn off your silent mode on your phone, turned on, and then I would like to first introduce myself. My name is Mátyás Mészáros, and I am working for Eurostat in the methodological unit of Eurostat, dealing with work package 2 of the Vision 2020 admin project, which is deals with methodological support for integration administrative data sources. Before we start the session, I would like to still say some of the issues which we can face here, because we already say today we had already a session about data integration, and we can see it's a trend. We can have more and more multi-source statistics where we have more and more different issues which we have to deal with to have a good quality statistical output. So in order, we have to take into account the different data sets, what is the specificities, what are the pros and cons for a given data set, and how can we integrate those sources, and how can we manage the issues which we face into it. And for this, we will see today four presentations in this field, four, I'd say, a little bit technical presentations. And for this, I would say first, we will have the presentation. Each presentation will have 15 minutes to make, presenter have 15 minutes to make the presentation. And after, we will take together the questions in the panel. And if you have meantime questions, you can ask questions through the Twitter account. You can see the Twitter hashtag in the bottom left corner where you can ask as well questions. So we can start. First, I would like to ask Antonella Baldassarini from ISTAT to make the presentation. Please. Thank you.
I'm here to present the result of a work developed with other colleagues, Valentina Chiariello, that works in the University of Naples, and Tiziana Tuoto, that works in the National Statistical Institute of Italy. So this work is focused on the identification of a statistical approach to measure illegal individuals that individuals that work in illegal activities, because this work has been promoted within the national accounts, because since September 2014 the economic value of illegal activities, some illegal activities, is included in national accounts. So so it's important to analyze the quality of this information that are generally based on administrative data or indirect approaches. So the idea to identify a statistical approach to improve the quality of this information has been at the basis of this work. We have an official sources of information, an administrative sources of information that is provided to ISTAT by the Ministry of Justice. This information is referred to alleged crimes for which judicial authorities started a criminal proceedings. But this information, the Ministry of Justice doesn't provide the unical code for crimes. So this, it's possible to use this information only at the micro level. At the meantime, there are a lot of variables that characterize these administrative sources of data. So we have personal data of the crimes, that is date and place of birth, gender, code of the proceeding and code of the criminals in the proceedings, characteristic of the crimes, that is date, place of the crime and the violated law details, and some other characteristics related to this we can consider related to criminals that are the age at the time of the crime, nationality, the association with other criminals and other crimes committed. So the idea that is at the base of this approach is to use all these sources of information, even if there is a high risk of linkage error due to the lack of this univocal code. Here now there are some slides where we present the results that we obtain aggregating this data, just only using this personal data. And you see here this first table where there are information, the counts of this information in order to identify these criminals, potential criminal, with the breakdown of crimes and per year. So you see that it's bigger the presence of drug trafficking. And here there are a presentation of other characteristics of these criminals, these potential criminals. So pyramid of ages, where you see that there are some differences with respect to the crimes. If we look at the age, if we look at the gender of this, and if we see, and also this characteristic changes per crime. And instead, in this slide, we present all the information available just only for drug crimes. So this is an example to see the potential of these sources of information. So, which could be the better method, statistical method, to use these sources of information? So, we think that we started from the idea that this database could be used as a list of potential criminals in which individuals can be observed repeatedly. And using we can also to measure the probability of each individual that is observed by this database, and the counts from this database are considered to come from a zero truncated Poisson distribution. But in the meantime, many criminals are missed. And so, because they could be active in the legal markets, but not observed. So we need to identify the whole amount of population. And for this reason, we use the generalized Zelterman estimator to calculate this whole population using all the socio-demographic variables that we have used as covariates. And we also adjusted this indicator in order to take into account possibility of false linkages. This is the formulation of the Zelterman estimator. We are in the numerator, we have the observed individuals, while in the denominator we have the probability to observe this hidden population. And we modeled also the covariates of this that are represented by the information, the socio-demographic information that we received before. So then here we have a table that will shows the model and also some statistical indicator in order to see which could be the best model to identify the individual per crime. And using this information, we have seen that the model change in relation to the crimes. So the most relevant covariate on drug crimes is, for example, the crime in association with others. This means criminal organization. Instead, the most relevant covariate on smuggling crimes are the other crimes, that is, the individual has been captured also for other crimes, the nationality, the gender, while the best model for prostitution, in this case, the prostitution exploitation, is without covariates. As I told before, we have tried also to adjust this estimator, taking into account these linkage errors due to the lack of an univocal code. So we have tried to identify an auxiliary sources of information, in this case the Lab of Force Survey, to measure this linkage error that changes respect to the crime. In fact, the Labor Force Survey for the Labor Force Survey we have the individual code of each individual in the population, so we can try to estimate this error, adopting the using this information and using the same covariates that we have used for the administrative database, and these are the results that we obtained. So at the end, in this graph, you see the final population for each kind of crimes. And for example, we see that for 2012, the year for which we have all the information in the previous slides, the total number of population involved in criminal is 5 times higher respect to the data referred to the administrative sources of information. So in conclusion, the estimating the legal population is an hard task. So the nature of the phenomenon is a hidden phenomenon, and the lack of official information, because maybe we can have public information but not official information on this phenomenon. It's an arduous task, but I think that we have to improve, encourage studies on this issue, because as I told you before, this information affects also the quality of GDB of national accounts aggregates, so it's important to promote studies on these issues. And here we present this possibility, this approach that could be used and could be substituted to the estimates that now we use that are referred only to indirect indicators and to expert information. There are some problems also to use this approach. We have to improve we have to go in depth with this kind of approaches. Instead, we would like to implement new analysis for other crimes, and also because we have seen that the results are affected by the number of crimes. So for crimes with a high level of recidivism, the information seems good. For the others, less. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the first presentation. And then I would ask Dimitris Pavlopoulos from the Vrije Universiteit Amsterdam to present his topic, the integration of inconsistent data sources using hidden Markov models.
Thank you. In the slide, it's only my name is mentioned, but actually this is joint work with my colleagues, Polina Pankowska, Bart Bakker, and Daniel Bersky. What I'm going to talk about is measurement error, and measurement error with the focus on official statistics. And measurement error is an issue that everybody knows that it exists, but national statistical offices don't do too much about it. And when they do something about it, it's typically not a model-based approach. And actually, when we have sometimes increasingly, and actually increasingly now, there are more than one data sources, and data sources that can be linked. But my feeling is, as an outsider to the world of statistical offices, is that statistical offices don't take advantage of that as much as they could. Sometimes even I feel some kind of rivalry between the two people working in these two data sources. And my message, one of my messages here, is there's no evidence that supports that, and actually, both data sources can work together to provide better official statistics. But at the moment, when something is done, when there are two data sources that can be linked, can produce, or in general, when they can produce estimates of the same phenomenon, then NSCs deal with the problem either with using one of them, when it's one that is considered the best, or using or averaging them, or using a more sophisticated macro integration method. What I'm going to present is a model-based approach to correct for measurement error, which is based on latent class modeling, and it's actually a special type of latent class modeling, the hidden Markov models. Before showing you how we do it, I will show you what we can get from that. We made an application on estimating the employment contract type. And so whether individuals have a temporary contract or a permanent contract or something else. And then what we put together in this table are what we call the first order statistics, so just the distribution of the contract type of people having permanent contract, a temporary contract, and other is whatever you can put together. So it's just all the rest, or even the non-employed are there. And we have data from the labor force survey, which shows, for example, that 8.7% of individuals have a temporary contract. That was in January 2007. The employment register, that's the register data, they tell us 13% have a temporary contract. And our estimation, so the model-based approach on the hidden Markov models, says 10.9%. So if we look at this, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. So we don't have to just verifying that it's somewhere in the middle. So we don't have to, there is not much extra to say here. However, if we look at second order statistics, and this is very important from a policy perspective, to know whether we live in a mobile labor market or in an immobile labor market, things are quite different. These are the 3 monthly, so in a period of 3 months, the percentage of people that moved from a temporary to a permanent contract. This shows how mobile is the labor market. The labor force survey says 5.7%. The employment register says 8.5%. The estimated approach, or the estimate we use, or our hidden Markov model, says no, it's only 3.2%. And I find this magnificent, or if you see from another perspective, a terrible result for our labor markets. So this model-based approach has a lot to tell us. How does it work? How do these models work? Very intuitively. If we start from what we call the Markov process, which says that a phenomenon that is observed consequently in time, what happens in a specific time point is only determined by what was happening in the previous time point, which in many cases is quite realistic, or the basis of a realistic approach. And to this, we add what we call a latent structure, which says that the true process, the true state, is not observed, but what we observe instead of X is some C, which may be the same or different than the true state. But, and that's the basic model, which we develop later, is that what we observe is only determined but by what reality is and by nothing else. And then, of course, there is an equation for the equation lovers. You can also look at the paper or the papers that we refer to for more information. Now, we think that the hidden Markov models are a very attractive tool for producing official statistics. However, there are two problems before they go in production. One, they are somehow complex and also time-consuming and also maybe expensive. And secondly, in most cases, to produce realistic results, you have to link data from different sources, because you have to relax on some of the assumptions. I'm not going to go into detail into that. But it requires linkage. And linkage solves the problem, but introduces a new challenge, which is linkage error. And then our research focus on this project is to see whether and how we can use them to correct for measurement error in official statistics. And we actually try to tackle these two very problems that I've referred to before. Our data, they come from Labor Force Survey and Employment Register. They're somehow the same data sources as the paper before. I presented the day before. It's almost 9,000 individuals, aged from 25 to 55. We take 15 time points. The 15 time points, because we have maximum five observations in the longitudinal component of the labor force survey, and the structure is like that. So we have five observations from the LFS, and from the employment register, we have 15 observations. We cover the whole period. From the LFS, this is January, but it may have started in February or in March for this cohort. The hidden Markov model is just an extension of what I showed you before. There are many arrows here, but keep this thing here. So what we do on top of what you have seen before is that we allow that, first of all, there are two indicators. This is the LFS, this is the employment register, and the error in the employment register is allowed to be correlated over time, and this is crucial to take into account, because this is how actually the data is collected. Sometimes the data is collected once or twice a year, and then an error that is there persists until the next moment that the data is taken from the companies. So there is a sort of a serial correlation in the error in the register data. At first, not in the survey data, but this comes a bit later. And then we also take in the real transition probabilities, the latent transition probabilities, we add some heterogeneity so that it's affected by age, by education level, but also a control for unobserved heterogeneity. What we do first is to see, is there a way that we do the estimation once, but then the statistical offices can take the estimates from the estimation we did once and take them further and produce official statistics for a number of periods after that, which makes the estimation, the production of official statistics easier and much cheaper. And and what we do is that we take the first estimation, the previous paper that I showed you, we redo it again from scratch, and then we compare it with the situation when we had taken the estimates of the previous enterprise and we plug them in the estimation of transition probability, so without new estimation of measurement error. And the results are very promising. So what you see here, these two numbers are of interest here. If we do the estimation from scratch in 2007, we come up with this transition probability, 1.7%. And then if we use the 2009 data, but with fixed measurement error estimates from the estimation of 2007, the estimate of the transition probability is almost the same, differs at the third and actually the fourth decimal level. So results are quite promising. We can take the measurement error estimates and plug them in for a number of years after the estimation. The second one is, what happens with linkage error? Does it bias our analysis? And here we do a simulation study with various degrees of false positive and false negative error. False negative means that individuals are not linked where they should have been linked. So it's actually missing data. And false positive is that individuals have been mislinked from the two sources, I mean. So instead of linking the correct estimate of an individual from the LFS to the correct individual from the employment register, you link them to other observations, to other individuals. And then we have played a lot here introducing several levels of linkage error, and then also the linkage error, there is a scenario where it's random and a scenario where it depends on some covariates. Also, related to the outcome variable. So the transition from temporary to permanent employment. And we say in this scenario that linkage error is higher when someone, according to the register data, moves from temporary to permanent employment. And then we compare the estimates from the estimates where no linkage error has been introduced. The results are again quite promising in the sense that you see here the relative bias. And then the relative bias is always quite low. You can see it here, the false negative, and here the false positive, irrespectively of the level of the linkage error that we introduced. So this is 20% mislinkage. That's really extreme. And the relative bias becomes high only in the case where an extreme mislinkage has taken place, so 10 or even 20%, and this mislinkage is associated with the variable of the process of interest. So only when the mislinkage takes place for people that move from temporary to permanent employment, only then are our results are really biased. In all other cases, our estimates are not so much affected by measurement error. And actually, there are some cases, but that requires more discussion, where linkage error is incorporated in measurement error correction. And that's why you see that this actually happens. So we know so far that we can produce inexpensive estimates that are possible to by reusing error parameters, and that linkage error is largely not a problem, except for extreme cases. Our next steps is whether the data collection processes matter, and this comes down to estimating the effects of dependent interviewing, or in other words, serial correlation in the survey data. So if there is serial correlation and the realistic form of serial correlation is with having dependent interviewing, asking the person, in the previous time, in the previous interview, you said this, is this still the case? Whether in this case, something changes. We have more error, or there is another way of correcting for measurement error, and so on. I can say preliminary results show that it doesn't matter much. But this is something that we have to work out further. And then the last point is that we want to apply it in model in estimating real processes. So for example, to have a cluster or sequence analysis of people, of trajectories of people in the labor market, and then see whether measurement error matters there. That's it.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Now I would like to ask Domenico Fabio Savo from Sapienz University to present his paper on the experimental usage of ontology-based data management for the Italian integrated system of statistical registers, and what are the quality issues?
What's your name, sorry? This one? Okay. So, I'm Domenico Fabio Savo. I come from University of Rome, La Sapienza. This is a joint work with, other my colleagues of University of Rome, La Sapienza, and a fantastic team of colleagues from the Italian National Institute of Statistics, ISTAT. So, in this paper, we presented an experimentation that we did for trying to apply successfully the ontology-based data management approach for data quality. So, okay, let me introduce the scenario. In the Italian integrated system of statistical register is the centralized source that is used in ISTAT for producing their surveys, analysis, and so on. All the data that are used to create this central data source comes from different and heterogeneous data sources. For example, other surveys, administrative archives, also geospatial data, and so on. These data are so integrated, and the final data are obtained through a processing phase where we have integration, validation, all the phase for obtaining high quality data. The processing phase work in this working data, and is also on this data that we applied this new approach, the ontology-based data management approach, for checking the quality of the data that we have in that area. So, what is ontology-based data management? Ontology-based data management is a new paradigm that is based on the idea of use both database theory and semantic technology for data management. Actually, it was created, developed for ontology-based data access or integration, so for semantic data integration. Then it is now used for also other kind of data management. In particular, we have used it for data quality. So ontology-based data management is characterized by the following principle. First of all, the data, they can stay where they are, so you don't need to move your data. All the approach is virtual. We never move the data from a data source to another one. We define a logic-based conceptual specification of the domain of interest, that is the ontology. Then we map the data in the data sources to the ontology by using declarative mapping assertion. Now that you have your ontology-based data management system, you can express all the services directly over the ontology layer. And then it's, at the end, the ontology-based data management system that actually takes care to automatically translate all the services that you have specified at the ontology level to the level of the data. In this, in our experimentation, we used our system, our ontology-based data management system, that is called Mastro, we developed in our research group. So, an ontology-based data management system is based on a three-level architecture. In the top level, we have the ontology. As I told you, the ontology is a specification of the domain of interest. It's a description of the domain. And it is used as a single, unified, conceptual view of the domain that is provided to the user. The user that can be other application or humans, of course. Then we have our data sources. They are external, independent, heterogeneous data sources. In the middle layer, we have the mapping. Mapping that are declarative assertions that are used to link the data sources to the ontology. Okay, so let's present a very simple example. This is a portion, a very, very small portion of the ontology that we developed for in our experimentation. This is a portion of the base register of individuals, families, and cohabitation. This is related on person, including residential data, and the family relationship. The ontology here is represented by using Graphol, that is a visual language for representing ontology that has the same expressive power of OWL, that is the V3C standard for ontologies. As you can see here, we have concept, for example, resident, that are person, this is an ISA relation. Person has an attribute, date of birth, also resident has an address, also resident belongs to a family. There are particular persons that are residents that are reference person for the family. They are head of a family. Also, in our domain, we have a relationship between resident and the reference person. For example, we can say that resident is the parent of a resident person. And this is the ontology, how we specify the ontology. Then there is the mapping layer and the data layer. The data sources are connected to the ontology, that are connected to the ontology in our experimentation, are those containing information about person and family in this very, very small example. In our experimentation, actually, we specified a lot of mapping assertion. There are not so much, but was just a proof of concept. And for this example, we just focus on two data sources, two tables, sorry, that are the tab person and the tab family person. And the first one contains information, of course, about the person, where we have the identification ID of a person, her date of birth, address, and so on. In the other tables, we have the information about the fact that a person identified by its ID belongs to a family that is identified by the family ID. And also, we have a Boolean value here that specifies that a person is the head of that family. Okay, so let's move to see an example of the mapping assertion. As I told you, they are assertions that are used to link the information in the database. This is a query over our data sources that is used to extract the data from the data sources to create instances to the ontology layer. Here, for example, we are querying the tables tab person for creating instances of the concept person. Of course, remember, we are not actually instantiating the ontology. The approach is virtual, okay? We never move the data. What does it mean that is virtual? For example, if you query your ontology, we, the system, rewrite the query that is specified on the ontology, rewrite the query in a query over the data sources. So, in our experimentation, we focus on three main quality dimensions. The first one is the consistency. Consistency that actually measures the fact that the data in the data sources are coherent with the ontology, with the models described by the ontology. For example, consistency can check if it's true that all the person that belongs to the same family have the same residential address. We express this by using constraints expressed in logic like this one. Also, we focus on accuracy. Accuracy that measures the extent to which the data accurately represents the real world. The real world represented, of course, by the ontology. We can use this measure to check, for example, if for each known family, known by the system, it's true that we know who is the referent person and his or her address. This is one something that we want to know. In this case, we need to use a particular kind of logic called epistemic logic here because we need to talk about what we know, with what we really know. Also, the last one is completeness. Also, this quality dimension, is used to check whether a given data sources contains all the relevant data or information about a specific phenomenon. For example, we can use this kind of constraint, completeness constraint, to check if all the person that are known by the ontology are stored in a specific table, in this case, in the tab pers table. This because in our system, this table, the tab pers table, should contain all the information, all the data about the known person by the system. Also, in this case, we refer to epistemic constraints. So, conclusion. Our experience demonstrated that actually ontology-based data management can be effectively used for quality assessment. The next step for the future, we aim to continue to work with ESTAT and extend the ontology we developed for this experimentation, and of course also the mapping assertion, to the whole domain covered by the ISSR system. Also, we are working on extending the ontology-based data management approach for addressing also other quality dimensions, in particular, the confidentiality of the data. And that's it. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. And I would ask Raffaele Traverso from the European Central Bank to make the last presentation on data fitness for integration.
Okay. Thank you very much, good afternoon, everybody. This is a paper that was written together with Bernadette Lauro, that is here in the public. So, okay, the tasks are I present, she takes the questions. No, I'm joking. Anyway, I'm also happy that I present after Domenico, because I think that the paper I'm presenting now, it's much related to the concept that you just presented. Actually, it's very interesting. I give a higher overview on data, the challenges of data integration. One of the challenges is indeed ontology. And we have actually at the ECB, we have a team working on that. And we call a dictionary that we need to put together, where we need to put together different definitions. So, the challenges of data integration, I could speak for 15 minutes only on that. But I was just to present concrete examples from the experience we have at the European Central Bank. Data are at the heart of policy making decisions at the ECB, and because of that, they are the most valuable asset at the ECB after people. And this consideration brought toward the adoption of a data management strategy at the ECB that aim at having more common and integrated data processes. The challenges of data integration are several, and I listed here. Our economists and analysts increasingly demand for granular data to be used for monetary policy decisions and supervisory analysis. These analyses are always more and more complex. And the availability of granular data also allow economists and analysts to use all the data possible to find answer and to drive monetary policy decisions. So the availability of a lot of data sources that are obtained both from official data sources but also from market data provider, for example, increase the volume of data. And on top, our economists and analysts want also to share data and share the results, and this is also an additional complication to the data management process, because of the confidentiality of some information that the granular data have. But nevertheless, our economists want to use all possible data and combine data together, and combine also individual data sources that were developed historically in silo. And this brings to also problem of coordination across data management activities at the ECB. Finally, our IT department, driven by big data and large-scale data, developed a new platform that is an Hadoop platform for data storage that gives for sure a lot of new possibility of integrating data, but we need to know how to use it and which capabilities we want to put on top to use it in a more efficient way. So just to simplify what I mean by having listed all the challenges, I want to present a use case that we have currently at the European Central Bank, where our analysts and economists want to use granular data on securities to drive decision on monetary policy, and for example to see the bank's portfolio rebalancing after the asset purchase program, or they want to assess the financial risk embedded in security holdings. To do that, they put together official statistics and data from from data market data providers. On top, they want to enrich data with data from market data providers on prices. Because these activities were done in several business areas at the same time in a non-coordinated way, in the team where I belong to, that is the Data Integration and Services division at the ECB, we were launching a pilot that is still an experimental project. But here I want to present what were the challenges of this project. For example, the first step for the pilot that is called FAB, Founding and Assets of Banks. We want to identify univocally the bank for which we want to analyze the security business. So for this, we need the master data that is the most authoritative source for the identification of the business entity. And for example, one of the problems that we had by putting together different sources is that we had different identifiers for the same bank. And then we need to put all this information together. One of the solutions we propose and we want to stress is that we need the quality master data to have, in the end, the quality of an integrated product in the end. This means that we will, in the end, have a centralized place where all the information about the bank, like the address, the name, the structure, the hierarchical structure, and the legal form, are all put in a common place. Another step was after we identify the bank, we want to identify the security, and here semantic integration is very important, and the quality of semantic integration is crucial, because if we have a different definition of the same security coming from different sources, we need to map this definition in a common dictionary that the ECB is called a single data dictionary. And we want to avoid discrepancy in the definitions and mapping errors. So if we are able to create this single data dictionary and you improve the quality of the dictionary, then we will also have, in the end, high quality integrated data in the end. Another aspect that is very important are the metadata that are linked to data. because we have attributes that are associated to data. And for example, when we link securities, we don't want to link securities with different frequencies. So the metadata can tell us if a number is quarterly data or, I don't know, annual data. We don't put together data that are different. On top, also methodologies may be different. For example, if we look at the prices of a security, we need to be sure that when we put together different sources, we link common the methodologies. For example, for prices, we take the end of date price and not the average or an average and the end of day price. And finally, we also need the technical integration, that is the IT combination, the contribution of the IT infrastructure to the entire process. That is for us is a condition that is necessary but is not sufficient, as I will explain also later. And for this, we have, as I said, the IT department that put together this Hadoop platform, that is a common platform that not only contains data, but it contains also the master data source, the metadata associated to data. And okay, we also need to improve the integration of the technical side of. Of integration, because we want also to have versioning and historization of data, and we also want to track data lineage, for example. And then we have also the software for the analysis of all the data that we put together. So with this slide, I just want to be sure that you take away that to integrate data, you don't just need only to put all data in the same platform, but you also need much more, that are master data, metadata, and semantic integration, together with technical integration, of course. Then I want to explain data maturity model and the levels of data management activities. So here, for example, when we try to put together the data from the FAB pilot, we had an issue with accessing the data, and this was the first step. Actually, was really tricky because some of the data had confidentiality, were under confidentiality regimes, and even if we wanted to share internally, we had some issues. So what we did in the very beginning was to start writing policies and governance so that we could manage the sharing of data. And here I want to just say that there is a maturity level approach that is an interactive approach to data management and to the quality of the data management activities. So we start from initial capabilities where all local processes are done in separate business areas, for example, and we have quality issues, and we want to reach toward the end of the process standards and less manual and more automatized processes. To do that, we discover with our pilot that it's not something that comes from one day to night. We need really an iterative maturity model approach, where all the dimensions of data management that are linked together are brought to similar levels of maturity. So we have in the beginning of the cycle, we have enabling factors that are that is governance, the IT infrastructure, and processes. So in the beginning, we assume that everything is kind of scattered, manual, local, and we want to improve all this process of data management. So we will then do the data management activities. So first we will solve the problem of accessibility, of assessing data. And then we will do the integration of data, and then finally we will share data, and we will assess the quality of this process through the data quality assurance processes that we have in place since years for single data sources. And then we look at this process, and we do also an assessment of the maturity levels of all the data management activities. And we observe that the more compatible the maturity of data is the maturity of data management activities, the most the product that results in the end is high quality. And then, okay, we are always doing this. We are repeating if we are not happy with the level of quality of the data management process, we can repeat again the cycle with the final aim to share data among our users with high quality data products. And then to conclude, I hope I managed to demonstrate, okay, it was very quick, but that the quality of integrated data need not only the quality of the data itself, but also we need to have master data integration, semantic integration, metadata integration, and technical integration. And that all these data management areas are linked together, and we need to bring all the different master data, semantic, and metadata fields at similar maturity level for the activities that are involved in the integration processes. And what helped a lot at the ECB was to develop policies, first a strategy that gives the vision of where we want to go with the integration, data integration, and what we want to, which are the answer we want to give to our users. And then we started writing policies to homogenize the way of doing data management across the European Central Bank in the different business areas. So it helps also to have coordinated data management policies and definitions. And then we also think that the centrally designed processes are also very useful, because if we have centralized master data or centralized dictionaries for matching the definitions, this helps a lot to then have a high quality integrated product. On top, we are also working on giving the possibility for the user to have data customization, data flagging of observation, data transformation that are also being reported and defined in a through common agreed comprehensive metadata, and the issue resolution process so that the users of statistics, when they put together data, they can and they figure out they have doubts or they have issues with data, they can report back to the source data set, the data owner, and we can start also a process there of improving the quality of data. And finally, just I want to say that even if you have source data sets that are already high quality data and are quality assured, when you integrate data, you may then find additional challenges. So I just want to say to conclude that the fitness for purpose of original source, in the end, I mean, it remain the same for the original sources itself, but the original sources needs to be prepared for integration. And this is the key message I would like to pass. If you have questions.
Thank you very much all for your presentations. Now it is time for questions, comments. So please, when you ask, please state your name and your affiliation, and then I already see one hands up or for question, and you receive a microphone. Thank you.
Well, My name is Paul Beamer, RTI International. I want to thank the speakers for excellent presentations. And I had a question for the first speaker regarding the importance of the illegal traffic, the illegal economy. Have you done any studies that actually measure or quantify the effect of that group on GDP? So to sort of motivate, is this a very important problem? What percent of GDP error is a result of undercounting that population?
So, see, the problem is relevant at the moment. We use for GDP, so this means aggregates in terms of value. We use in the European countries approaches that are developed by Eurostat, so they are, we use a pragmatic approach. We don't use statistical approaches. Generally, we use sales, the quantity of goods. Sometimes we use the source of information or users. The problems is referred, and this way we can identify the economic value of aggregates. And other things is to estimate the legal population, so which are the illegal workers that contribute to these values. And generally, in this moment, we use per capita value added per each worker. So we try to find some indicator like this. Instead, with this statistical approach, we can change our method. The problem is that administrative data have a lot of problems, so we need to clean a lot these sources of information before to use this in terms of a statistical model. I work in the direction, the directorate of a national council. So what I would like to stress is that the quality of the national council cannot be changed for the use of this not reliable sources of information. So we need to identify new sources of data. We need to improve the quality also of survey that there are some surveys, for example, on drug consumers we have that they use the general population, that there are some general population surveys, so something we know. But we have to improve these methods on illegal activities. Otherwise, also the national accounts aggregates can change quality because we use the source of information or indicators that are not so reliable.
Thank you for your reply. Any other questions concerning? Yes, please.
Hi, I'm Roberta Varriale from Istat. I have a question for Dimitri. You said that nowadays official statistics doesn't use this kind of models, and of course we do not have experience on that. But I think one of the problems in using this kind of models is that sometimes the latent variable doesn't perfectly agree with the measurements that we use. So what do you think about that? So for example, let's say you use two indicators for permanent and not permanent position, both for administrative sources and surveys. But the thing is that usually official statistics perfectly knows what surveys, or at least should know what surveys are looking for. So makes questionnaires, questions, everything exactly for its aims. While sometimes administrative sources, I mean, look for something else. So they give indication of the phenomenon, but then in the end, what does the latent variable means? Can we produce estimates based on something that is latent. So I think that is the main problem, one of the main problems of, in using this kind of models for official statistics.
Well, I know, for example, that you are using these models, eh? Yeah. There can be several answers. It's never perfect. But also, if you're not using model-based approach, is it perfect? And the answer is no, because you have error. And it's clear, we all know that there is error there. And the sources of error are known, as in the surveys, a bit less in the register, but error is there. So even if you don't use a model-based approach, you don't present reality. Now, when you use a model-based approach, I think that the main thing is that you have to know and you have to tell your audience what you're exactly presenting. You have to do your, you have to, the issues that you raise, they're valid. So if I understand well, you have two sources, you have register and survey. Maybe the concept that I was presenting, the temporary contract, is not measured conceptually in the same way. So when the question in the survey differs than what the register is measuring, this exists. I mean, this problem exists. In this particular case, I think that they are measuring quite the same thing, but it shouldn't be always the case. Sometimes you can solve it, sometimes you can think of a model that can solve that, sometimes not. But I think that in general, there are cases, such as the one that I present, where a model-based approach is much closer to reality. And especially in the case of second-order statistics, because second-order statistics is extremely influenced by measurement error. Think, you have in time somebody which is in state A, regardless of what A is, in three time points, A, A, A. Well, if you make one mistake, and then instead of A, you're measuring B, then in the distribution of the variable, it's one error. But then in the second order statistics, when you have the transitions, the error is double, because there is no transition in reality while you observe A to B and B to A. And that's much further than reality than a good model.
You have the other question as well.
I just wanted to add one thing to Dimitri's response, and maybe there's confusion about what latent variable is, what a latent variable is here. I think there's different kinds of latent variable analysis. One where you sort of make up the construct. You know, you have a bunch of measures and you figure out based upon how many classes there are, what's a construct mean? What does a construct actually mean? But what Dimitri's doing, I think, is basically saying, you know, there's no guesswork about what the construct is, it's the true employment status. And we have, so the truth is latent. And what we have here is erroneous observations or erroneous indicators of that truth. So it's very different than some latent variable analysis where you try to decide what the construct means based upon loadings of different factors. This is not that situation. The situation is the truth is the latent variable, and there's a lot of situations where truth is latent in survey work because it's very difficult to get the truth from a single or even a set of questions from a questionnaire. And so then the question is, you know, how do you get a good measurement of that truth, of the true labor force status, and that's where the latent class analysis comes in.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Any questions to the other panelists? If it's here, we have a... No.
Thank you. Thank you for the excellent presentations. And I would like to ask a question to Domenico Fabio Salvo related to the ontology-based metadata. In particular, I would like you mentioned that you are going to experiment this to solve the problem of confidentiality. right? So which is exactly the problem that you want to address? Would it be possible using this system or model to deal with a different kind of confidentiality among data? And furthermore, I would like to know if the model is a specific model belonging to this ontology system, or does it reflect an ISO model? Because we adopted something similar at DCB for the data inventory. It's a relationship, relational database, where we also have these relationships, which allow to identify parent-child, and which applies a very similar model, and which was taken from an ISO model.
Okay, thank you for the question. About the confidentiality. Of course, we are working on it, but our idea is actually to define some specific mapping language for also specify not only where the information has to be taken to create instances at the ontology level, but also for specify who can access to them that particular kind of data. So this means that at the point, at the ontology level, you can provide access to specific user, to each specific user with specific confidentiality level, only the information that they are allowed to access. This is the idea, but also other things. For example, ontology gathering. Also, what is very important is that if some user are not allowed to access to some information, some data, also it's important that it should be impossible for them also to obtain, to reach that information by using external data or by reasoning on such data. So by using our model, we aim also to avoid this kind of information gathering. About your second question, I'm sorry, but I didn't understand it.
The ISO model?
The ISO model is a...
ISO.
ISO. Oh, sorry, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we, of course, we try a lot to refer to other models, but typically when we work on a specific domain, we develop very, very specific ontology. So we refer to what we call high-level ontology, not so much, typically, because each organization actually needs its specific ontology, and we work a lot on provide these services. But I agree that refers to standards, it's very important.
Thank you. Please, I see your hand in front, in the second row. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My question is for Raffaella Traverso. I found very interesting your suggestion to take, to put together different aspects of quality related to, for instance, semantic, statistical aspects, technical aspects, and my question is if you have some strategy in order that which ensures that these aspects are considered together, and at strategic level, at some operational level. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Actually, the strategy is exactly that. We start looking at all the different data management topics, and we try to bring them together, having a vision where we want to go. After the strategy, as I said, we start already working on policies. Then we will work on guidelines, best practices to be shared and commonly agreed. All these policies, strategies, best practices need to be transparent in the institution, so then everybody can see if they can apply. And in the case of principles that they should not go against. Then we are also working at the practical and implementation level together with the IT department to then go to procedures and processes and to look at the concrete practical examples. And then we are also working, for example, with the IT on, we are working on a project charter where we will then ask for support by the IT department to give a way of concretely put in practice what we say in the policies. So it's really different levels that start from the vision, then they go to the strategy. But the key thing is that it needs to be shared and transparent, and all people working in the same institution need to know and need to see where we want to go. And yeah, but we are approaching them from a bottom up approach, and from a top down approach, we look at all the several dimensions. Thanks. I hope.
Thank you for your reply. Any further questions? Comments? Want to say still something to God? Then I would have a question, because you mentioned here that you are, at least for the ontology and the semantic base that you are working on, it's very important how do you do this mapping exercise. It's very, very important. And for my question is, it's very important how you maintain this mapping, because it really creates the quality. And how do you ensure the quality in that field? This is my question for you.
Okay. It's a very hard task to maintain the mapping. Also, develop the mapping the first time. It's a teamwork that typically we that means our team, the ontology designer and mapping designer, developing together with the ET expert of the organization. For the maintenance, okay. This is hard. We have some tools for developing mappings, also for checking their consistency. So these tools typically are able to reverse if there is some problem with respect to the schema. Also, we worked in some update techniques that consider not only when the data sources change, but also if you try to change the ontology, something changed in the ontology. And the question in that case was how the mapping has to be modified to agree with this new specification at both ontology level and data source level. So we know that is actually, an hard work, and we are investing a lot on it.
And just add that I agree what you said. The problem of the lack of resources is also at the European Central Bank, also because if you want to map all the possible data and information data sets, it's a very tough job. I just want to say that the European Central Bank, we are also working on promoting standards. Because if, for example, we would have common identifiers, or for example, LEIs for securities or bank or semizing code. So we want standards will help solving the problem of the mapping at source. So we are also working on pushing for that at a high level. At the moment, we are doing a lot of mapping, so we are trying to avoid that the different business areas in silo do the same mapping repeat with the duplication. So we have a central team that does the mapping. What we are trying also to do, if there is a new data collection, we use already existing definitions. We don't create a new one and then we map. So we try to reuse what is already in-house. But we know that the maintaining mappings is costly. We are also trying to have the help of the user themselves, that maybe they know also about the definition better than because they know the use of data, and we are so have a centralized team that have the supervision, but also delegate some tasks to the final users. This is what I recall that we do at the European Central Bank.
Thank you for your reply. Still some questions? If not, then I will try to make a short summary of this session. So we see today four presentations concerning data integration and the importance of it. What is based on, two of them is most modelic based, and then two more about the semantic and the ontology based. For both of them, it's quite important, for at least for the model says, and assumptions which is based on it, because we can have see a discussion as well here that what is the assumption, it if it's true or not, it's quite relevant if it can be really used and enhance the future statistic of shared statistics. And as I already mentioned in the last other answers, that it's quite important as well in ontology based how its mapping is done and what is the quality of this process, because independently if we have very good quality data but this mapping or this integrated process is not good, we will not have a good output for official statistic. So at least we see what we saw, these important factors which can influence official statistics, at least in the quality field. So again, thank you very much for your attention, and I would like to again thank all the participants and our participants of the panel for their presentation and their replies. Thank you again.